Well, once again, welcome to everyone. Sounds like today we have over 40 people who signed up for this, and hopefully it won't be too chaotic, and you'll each have a chance. If you've got any important ideas to toss into the ring here, we won't miss them. Certainly, you're free to contact us after this meeting if you feel as though you didn't have enough time to express your particular views on the subject. We've had an organizing committee that's using the last several months to begin to design this event that's going to take place next week in Seattle, and I'm representing the group along with several other members of the ARCS steering committee. Larry Hinsman is helping us out here representing IARC, and Dave McGuire, who can't make it to the event today, is the co-chair on behalf of CERCH. So ARCS, CERCH, and IARC are joining forces here to begin to articulate some of these ideas having to do with making better use of models and data sets to bring about Arctic system synthesis. We have some additional AC members, Mark Cerez and Mark Steele, who are not officially on our organizing committee, but certainly have been very vocal advocates for this effort and have given us some very interesting and important ideas. Kelly Faulkner, I believe, is a program manager at Antarctic Sciences, is on the line. Is that true? I didn't recall hearing her name.
No, she's not logged in yet.
She's not logged in
no.
yet. Okay. And, of course, the Science Management Office for ARCS and the ARCS staff really has to be congratulated for really moving this thing along for the many, many months it's been in the offing, and particularly Helen and Lori and Wendy deserve some recognition for getting us to this point. Next slide, please. Okay, so we'd like to accomplish basically six things, and they're listed here. First of all, we'd like to review for you some of the rationale for bringing together a community discussion on these data and modeling issues for synthesis. We'd like to provide for you an overview of our ideas on how this synthesis workshop next week is going to roll out. The third thing we'd like to accomplish is to begin to dig a little bit into the agenda for that workshop, and we have some ideas on what we call work science examples or themes that we believe will be the points of engagement for the community around what could be a pretty complicated set of discussions. So we're using these as focusing devices. We'd like to get out there some of our ideas, and then in turn, and item four here, is to get your input on our thinking. And if as we move through, we're also going to unveil some of our ideas on addressing some broader, more cross-cutting issues that we've got to keep our eyes on. And then finally, this is really an open process. We're looking for your ideas, your issues and concerns having to do with any of what we're going to be talking about over the next hour or so. Next slide. So as I'm sure this needs no introduction, ARCS has really been making a very decided move towards synthesis science, and I guess it's fair to say that now that process has been going on for the last few years. It's not a new idea, and in fact, ARCS is one of many consortia that you could think of that is actually in the business of doing more and more Earth system synthesis. For example, the National Centers that are building global circulation models and Earth system models are a good example of thinking synthetically. In the international sphere, for example, the IGBP has some major efforts looking at synthesis. We're not alone, and we're focused on the Arctic as a system. And the whole idea here is to try to explore ways in which we all can join forces from our individual perspectives to begin to assemble a better understanding of how the Arctic's working as a system and how it functions within the larger Earth system, how it regulates processes that may feed back into the behavior of that large system and how the large system then affects the Arctic. In this whole context, we recognize that increasingly we're going to be put upon by policymakers and those who make important national and international strategic environmental decisions, that we're going to have to come up with some important insights about how particular decisions play themselves out in this larger system context. So we have to recognize that we're not just doing science, we're also doing science for policy as well as for public engagement and education. Next slide. Arguably, we've been trained in a, let's say, less than synthetic mode, at least I could speak for myself as I went through my educational experience. This idea of synthesis was never really formally taught to me, and I bet you that most of the people in the on this E-Town meeting can probably say the same. And as a consequence, there's ample evidence that the work that's been done over the last many years in Arctic science has often been very project-specific, could argue discipline-specific, with a culture of the kinds of models and the kinds of data sets that have emerged to serve the needs of our individual communities. As a result, the kinds of data that we use, the structures of those data sets, the time and space resolution, as well as the domains of interest, all are a complicated amalgam of different approaches. And given the fact that we're attempting to achieve synthesis, we at some level have to begin to engage this potential difficulty. Furthermore, depending on the particular kinds of data sets that we need to get hold of to execute our synthesis, we sometimes find that there are restrictions on the release of this data, and the access that we might otherwise have to freely available data is not always there. So we have to deal with this, let's say, legal and cultural issue at the same time. Next slide, please. So just taking this next step forward, as individual researchers, we're in some sense, and not in all cases, of course, but in some cases, in many cases, we're actually a little bit stovepiped into the way we focus on our own research data. In many cases, is having to handle it, not a funded part of our research, and we do this in many cases from sort of a voluntary standpoint to be good citizens in the community. Frameworks by which we could enable wide distribution of the information that we each individually are generating is probably generally lacking, and with some attention to try to get that information out into the hands of other researchers might bear some good fruit. At the same time, there are many opportunities on the horizon to really begin thinking this through and beginning to make some inroads into this issue. There are new capabilities from IT world and cyber infrastructure. There's a new directorate at NSF that's handling cyber infrastructure issues. There are emerging new analysis tools, including all sorts of sophisticated Earth system models, both global and continental scale and regional. New types of instrumentation can be brought to bear on this issue, and that includes in situ instruments, as well as trying to look a little bit more broadly, the creative use of remote sensing in this challenge. We also have upon us the IPY and challenges in terms of designing an effective and long-lasting Arctic observing network. And all these challenges really are beginning to loom large, and if we could head out one step ahead of these problems, perhaps we can bring a little bit more order to a situation that might get chaotic very quickly. So we are planning, and we've planned, and we're going to execute the synthesis workshop, New Perspectives Through Data Discovery and Modeling. That's going to be next week at the Bell Harbor Center in Seattle. And the very specific goal of this particular workshop is to unite data providers with data users and to jointly, looking at it from both perspectives, begin to identify some innovations in how we might be able to grapple with this issue of data management, how we can arm the users with the information in a timely manner and in a creative manner. We'd like to, as part of this whole dialogue, really take stock of the kinds of technologies that are out there to make this task a bit easier. And how can we bring observational information into the modeling context to advance our Arctic system science? At last count, we have more than 50 participants from the data provider community, from the technology and information technology community as well. And we make the distinction between technology, for example, for advanced instrumentation, and the purely more digital parts of that issue, the information technology part of the puzzle here. We also have brought together data consumers, people who typically use large, often complex Arctic system data sets to try to achieve synthesis. We have some examples of that to share. And finally, bringing in knowledge brokers. And by that term, we mean people who are engaged with the policymakers, who are in the position to take the results of the Arctic system science community and distill that out and make it understandable to policymakers and to the public. It's important to emphasize that this whole workshop is really much more than simply about the information technology and about archiving and issues like metadata standards and data management. It will include hopefully a very vibrant discussion about those issues, but it is much more. It's really trying to take a multidimensional set of perspectives and bring those together. We recognize that not everyone will be able to make the meeting in Seattle, and as a consequence, we've designed some we call e-participation, where the plenary sessions will be video streamed, and there will be an opportunity through an online bulletin board to solicit your comments during the 3 days of the workshop if you're not on site. In terms of executing this workshop, we'll be creating a set of plenary sessions as well as some breakouts where we're going to focus on these work science examples and also discuss some of these broader cross-cutting data and modeling topics. Also, which is not shown there, we're going to have some posters that will allow people who weren't able to present their findings directly to share those ideas that way. The major output that we envision for the workshop will be a report on the key issues that we uncover, on the emerging opportunities, and as well as some of the challenges and gaps that we see in this arena. And we'd like to, at the end of the day, create this report as a set of recommendations to the National Science Foundation on potential future investments in data discovery and modeling for synthesis. Next slide, please. So we're going to focus a bit today in preparation for this workshop on some of these breakout topics. And because the gathering is going to involve more than 50 people, we figured that to really make it a valuable exercise that's going to yield something concrete, we really have to be working in smaller groups. So our current idea is to break into five or six breakout teams, and we're going to create a set of so-called worked science examples. These are representing challenges that are concrete science issues that will help us frame the discussion on the data information needs and some future approaches that would allow us to advance our science. These are not meant to be exclusive, and these are not meant to somehow preordain a set of science priorities that are then presented to the foundation. This is hardly the case. What we're really trying to do here is to use some hopefully rich examples of synthesis-relevant topics around which we can begin to cast the dialogue. We'll show you some examples in a few slides. We're going to be working these science examples, and then along the way we'd like to also lay out some broader data management issues and data integration issues that, in some sense, cross-cut any of the individual science themes and science topics that we'd be talking about. Next slide, please. So the goal of these work examples really test how we can really come together and organize our thinking around these synthesis challenges. So one thing we want to achieve is during each of these breakout dialogues, we want to be able to talk about issues of data access and data discovery. So what type of data management systems would be optimized to do so? What types of visualization techniques or data mining approaches that would help us in terms of bringing together an interdisciplinary team to really begin to look at some of these questions in an integrated fashion. In terms of data integration and assimilation, we'd certainly be talking about issues of interoperability and how we would struggling in some sense, at least initially, to talk about design so that we can cross platforms on which the different data sets reside. And how do we deal with multiple formats and multiple resolutions and the inherent fragmentation in the observational data sets that might otherwise be used productively. We have to keep our eye on the ball in terms of making sure that, although it could be quite satisfying for us to have these internal discussions on how to create these frameworks, then what? How do we reach out to the broader community? How do we create distillates of what we're talking about that could find its way into the broader education and policy and public outreach arenas? Then there are a whole suite of what we term cultural and organizational issues. Can we use this type of an exercise to unite different science cultures around the notion of synthesis? Do we, for example, need working groups that could be established on a more or less, let's say, semi-permanent basis to tackle some of these issues? Do we somehow have other needs? For example, would there potentially be a need for a bricks-and-mortar facility to facilitate this kind of an effort, such as you find in the ecological community in Santa Barbara? There's the NCEAS, the National Center for Ecological Analysis and Synthesis, that seems to be quite successful for that community. And so these and any other issues that come up during the discussion, we would like to be able to present ultimately to the foundation as a new set of ideas generated from within the community. Next. So we're going to do a little round robin here, where we're going to give you a few examples of what the organizing committee has been thinking about, and then we're going to shortly thereafter open it up for some discussion. But what we'd like to do is just kind of give you an idea of the way we thought we could make most productive use of our time in Seattle, where we would create these breakout groups around these thematic questions. So I'll kick it off with just one example, and then I'm going to pass it to my colleagues, and they'll each make a few comments to explain the subsequent slides here. So just as one example, and again, this is not preordained, it's a proposal, one possible issue that we thought might engage a fairly broad set of perspectives would be to cast the challenge of designing a carbon accounting system for the Pan-Arctic. And given the fact that we now have across the board a real sea change in the way climate change question is now viewed, not only in the scientific realm, but also now amongst policymakers and the public at large, there probably is going to be some active thinking about how the terrestrial biosphere is going to behave in the broader context of carbon mitigation strategies. So first of all, there are going to be a whole bunch of technical issues that could be brought to bear on this question. For example, there would need to be coherent methodologies for mapping and interpreting land use change and how that is plugged into the carbon balance of the Pan-Arctic. We would have to come up with methodologies for mapping out over space and time emission estimates, both for CO2 and some of the affiliated trace gases. There would be an immediate link to other communities, the communities that are looking at hydrology and biogeochemical cycling. There would be feedback, a whole suite of feedback issues to the climate change and climate variability question. We have to struggle with taking point measurements from plots or from, let's say, towers, and regionalizing those estimates and ultimately coming up with national and potential Pan-Arctic flux estimates. And then, of course, there'd be a whole arena of discussion that could be brought to bear on this in terms of innovative new sensor systems, perhaps part of the AON network, but here directed towards the carbon question. And that's on the science and technology side. Then, of course, there's a whole suite of very, very rich discussions on how to make this relevant to policy. We probably benefit from discussion on cap and trade economics and how one might come up with strategies to control the industrial, if you're doing national carbon accounts, how would you come up with rule systems, for example, in terms of accounting for industrial sources versus the biotic sources? How about enforcement? If you bring biotic emissions into the picture, what does that mean in terms of enforcement strategies? And we know from ecological studies that the biosphere has substantial time lags, and response times for specific mitigation strategies may take many, many years, if not decades, to finally realize. So all of these issues could be really the raw material for a very interdisciplinary perspective on a single question. So that's just one example, and we have a few more to present to the group on our town meeting here. So I'm going to turn this now over to John Weatherly, who's going to talk about our second example. We'll give you a total of four or five of these.
Hi, this is John Weatherly. So I came up in preparing for this and sort of ideas that are interdisciplinary themes. I've sort of grabbed sort of a fairly broad question, but mostly stolen from what I've seen other people talk about, but it certainly applies to, you know, what are sort of the physical Arctic climate and sort of biological and social impacts of things like of these modes of Arctic circulation. And so the overall question I'd say is, how do modes of Arctic atmospheric and oceanic circulation affect life in the Arctic? And it's the life in the Arctic part is obviously vastly broad, and you can say, well, in what ways? And those are the examples. You could look at various kinds of examples. One would be impacts just on Arctic residents, including how the weather and ice conditions change with atmospheric modes. How does how does the tundra itself respond to different atmospheric modes? How does hydrology on land is affected in different modes of the atmosphere in the Arctic? On the ocean side, you can certainly look at how either linked atmospheric and ocean circulation modes affect nutrients and productivity on the oceanic shelves, very much what comes out of things like SBI, shelf basin interaction. And then looking at other parts of the ecosystem in the Arctic, migration patterns, if they're affected by atmospheric modes include or oceanic modes, including whale migration or other marine migrations, and on land, reindeer migrations, for example. So I've sort of put out there a whole suite of life in the Arctic, and those can be, of course, social impacts in terms of activities of Arctic residents or biological impacts. And so the graphics I put on there sort of describe, I didn't put a series of processes and arrows, but sort of going from upper left to lower right, essentially going from sort of a picture of the Arctic Oscillation Northern Annular mode, and next to that the index of that over about 50 years, I think. And the question, you know, is if you've got these driving atmospheric modes, maybe they're partly independent from the oceanic modes, but somewhat driven by those as well, how do those, say, affect marine life in the Arctic on the far right, whether it's marine mammals or fish stocks or nutrients, going to the lower right, I'm sorry, lower left, hunting and fishing by Arctic native residents and their conditions on the ice. How does the ice itself change with those atmospheric modes? And then, as I mentioned, sort of the lower right, caribou, let's say, caribou, and how does that affect, how do they interact with both biology on the tundra, hydrology, water, you know, water resources, but maybe the time of melt or the icing over the tundra and certain events. Those are, I think, topics that have been discussed in both in projects, in other people's projects, certainly not mine, but other people's projects. But I think it gets the question of, if you have, we have data of looking at the sort of the data management or the data access part of this. If we know we have atmospheric data, and what kind of, you say, well, what kind of reanalysis data do we need to apply to this to approach this kind of problem? And then physical climate data, and then what kind of biological data from the oceans and on tundra and land, and then what kind of social, you know, human dimension data do we need to approach this? Those are all obviously very sampled in very different ways and stored, and the amount of public access to those kinds of data is very different depending on where they reside and how people look at them. They're looked at from very different sides of the discipline, and that's, I think that is a main part of the workshop, is to develop sort of the best ideas to how are you going to tackle the best way to make these kinds of data not necessarily interoperable, but at least accessible across the disciplines where we know with that there are people that have a handle on these data and can and that they're accessible in a way that the data aren't being lost even from the projects we have going on now, and that they're there for the future in a way that maybe not, if they're not all in one place, are they all in places that are going to be easily accessible and we know about them 10 years from now when we want to solve more of these problems, or even starting now.
So, John, it looks like someone has a question. Peter Hacker.
Great.
Yeah, you posed this, John, at first in terms of lots of science questions represented by your five pictures. I think for the users, you know, and these are the scientists who are going to be answering all these questions, the key thing is that they have easy access to the underlying atmospheric and ocean data. And you were suggesting that point near the end of your dialogue, but I want to just reinforce that as a central issue.
Yeah, and as I said, in the workshop, and this as an example question is exactly that. It's an example to say, okay, how with these kinds of data that we know are out there in many different forms, what do we need to ensure that that PIs who have the data and other organizations are able to see where they're going to go, and that we know that they're going to be accessible to other people who may not, you know, there's lots of, you know, I don't know where to go for the other kinds of data other than the two in the upper left. I don't know where to start looking other than asking the experts, the other people I know or don't know yet, the people that are in the lower right realm. And so seeing, not necessarily even knowing, looking at all the data myself is there, but maybe knowing where to go with a connection to somewhere where I know that there's either somebody or data there, or that I can make a connection and start connecting the dots on these various kinds of data.
So go on to number three.
Yep, I'm fine that.
John, you have to finish. So
yep, I'm fine. That's fine.
Okay, so Marika, are you on the?
Yep, I'm
okay.
Here. Yep. So this is Marika Holland from NCAR. And as a further science example to explore data modeling needs for systems science, I came up with this example of the conditions and consequences of a seasonally ice-free Arctic Ocean. And again, this is a very broad question, much like John's question discussed previously. So just sort of the science behind this in terms of the ice extent time series that you see in the upper right panel. Of course, the observations show these quite dramatic decreases in the September ice extent. Climate model simulations suggest that those are going to continue into the future, and that by the end of this century, we might expect seasonally ice-free Arctic conditions to occur. About half the IPCC fourth assessment models show that sort of situation. So this has numerous, of course, conditions and consequences for the Arctic and global systems. It's a very interdisciplinary question. Of course, there are socioeconomic implications, physical climate implications, effects on things like carbon cycles, wildlife in the region that uses the sea ice, such as polar bears. And a lot of these things are being discussed about sort of individually, but of course there's this coordinated change going on that as in efforts to look at synthesis of the Arctic system, we would like to explore those interrelations as scientists. So what tools do we need? Of course, we need tools to look at the observed data record, in-situ data, remote sensing data to look at some of these linkages, paleoproxy data perhaps to look at time periods in the past where less sea ice was present, climate models, other types of models, process models, et cetera. So this is a question that really requires a number of different tools. And many of us are used to just looking at one of those tools. So again, we need to not only link the science, but link these different data and modeling sources. And this question also, of course, has important links to the global system, both for physical climate, also socioeconomic of the system, how it's going to affect shipping and how that will affect economies and nations well outside the Arctic. So this is another example that hopefully provides a nice context to examine these data and modeling needs in these efforts to advance synthesis science. So again, this would be sort of one of these examples that we would explore in a workout group and look at what limitations there are to try and look at this type of integrated question. I don't really have anything further to say about it unless there are questions.
Any questions? Okay, then let's go on to
our... I'm actually curious, Charlie, if people on the phone that haven't been part of our discussion so far are understanding what we're talking about with these science examples and how we intend to use them at the workshop. I think that, and I'm asking that partly because if I hadn't been a part of our ongoing discussions, I'm not sure that I would be clear about it.
I'm sorry, Wendy, are you saying that those who joined late or...
No, I'm wondering if all the 44 or so participants on the phone understand the way that we intend to use these science examples at the workshop. I know you explained it.
Right.
But
I think maybe we could go through the examples,
uh-huh.
And then we're going to open this up to discussion shortly thereafter. So any question on what the intent or the scope of what we're trying to do, if that was unclear, we could hash that out in the open discussion. So I think a picture's worth a thousand words, so maybe we should just go through these and then we could revisit that question that you just raised in plenary, so to speak. Okay, so how about number four? Larry, are you on the line for us?
I am. Is my phone on mute?
No,
I can hear you.
Thanks. This is about data simulation of the Bering Sea circulation, and I'm not... this is some work of Gleb Pantaleev from here at IARC, and it's I'm not an expert in this, but I think this is a really good example of one of the sophisticated analyses or sophisticated modeling tools that Charlie was talking about earlier, and that this seems to be, to me anyway, a new modeling approach where they're able to utilize various desperate data streams to actually incorporate them into the modeling so they can come up with a real good quantitative understanding of how the system is operating as a system, so you can examine each of the individual system components in concert. And the nice thing about this approach is that you don't need, the data can be on, the different types of data, it can incorporate any types of data, essentially. It can be on different spatial grids, on irregular time steps, and so it's possible to utilize this technique to examine how the changes are occurring in the system. And after the model is verified, you can also use it for prediction. And I guess the important thing about this is this can be applied to any type of system, and that used for permafrost modeling or atmospheric modeling, ecologic, hydrologic. It's just a new modeling approach, I believe, that's going to be very valuable. In this particular example, there's many different types of data that are used in this, from satellite imagery of sea ice, there's profile data for moorings, there's drifters, there's atmospheric reanalysis data. And this modeling approach, you can optimize on any model parameter, on any model coefficient or any boundary condition, and examine any individual component of the integrated system. This could be used for, green ecology. You could look at how the change in sea ice might affect the ice algae and how that affects phytoplankton and eventually fisheries. Or you could look at carbon budget analyses, or you could actually even use it for to go beyond that, to look at social system analysis, to look at shipping, to look at fishing, or other feedbacks to the atmospheric system. But anyway, I think this is a neat new modeling approach that should be applied further. So I'll end there. Yeah, is there something you want to add from that?
I just would like to add to it, for example, in the first example which was shown today, Shamil Maksutov is planning to apply, he plans to apply this technique for carbon fluxes from Earth to the atmosphere, as I know, for example. Hello?
Sounds good. Thanks,
here.
So I guess that's in a nutshell what I wanted to say about this particular approach.
It looks like someone has a question or a comment. Vladimir Romanovsky.
Go ahead, Vlad.
Have we finished?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, my comment is a little bit more general comparing to what I just have heard. It's excellent presentations, and I understand quite well where you guys are planning to go with the data management, data assimilation, and so on. My question is about the component which is missing in the Arctic system. It's geospace. And in geospace, I mean whatever is after atmosphere and even solar forcing to the climate changes and things like that. In our field, we do some stuff similar to what you are planning to do in a field of upper atmospheric physics and solar terrestrial physics, and we do that over the Antarctic and in the Arctic as well. So my question is, if you expect that community to join you and see how we all are handling data, that's one of the common issues, and see where the geospace could be a part of the Arctic system science. Yeah, at NSF, for example, there is a division between Arctic natural sciences and Arctic system sciences. However, I see that there is a common topic, common field is between, it's a data collection, data handling, data assimilation, and things like that. So I'm interested to hear if the community would be into Arctic system science community would be interested if people from geospace community somehow will join. I'm not suggesting that it can be done right away, but at least to expect that Arctic system science really consider geospace as a part, as a component. Website, ARCUS website, just open it, claims that Arctic is highly complex and ta-ta-ta, and it's a tightly coupled system of people, land, ocean, ice, and air that behaves in a way and so on and so on. I think that upper atmosphere and geospace is missing here, whatever we call it. So that's one of my comments or questions.
That's an excellent point that I think we could bring into the plenary discussion. If I might ask that we progress through just the next few slides. They're not many, but I think we need to get through our formal presentation and open it up to these interesting general ideas. Okay. So one thing that we wanted to share with the group here is to open this up to the general discussion here and ask the question of whether or not the examples that we have shown, first of all, are understandable to the group at large with respect to what we're trying to achieve. That is, to create a set of thematic topics that would be a rich, fertilizing ground for these kinds of discussions.
Mm-hmm.
And that would include many different technical perspectives, many different disciplines, science as well as policy and outreach, okay? And we tried to craft these as just our first guess as to some compelling issues that would you'd need teams of researchers tackling with potentially new and innovative data and modeling approaches. And when we began to craft this short list of topics, we laid out a set of criteria, and they're listed there in this slide. For example, we were looking for topics that fundamentally forced us to synthesize our understanding of the Arctic system as it stands today. We were looking for topics that cross traditional disciplinary boundaries and that lend themselves well, and go back to the points that John was making a few minutes ago, integrate a variety of data sources, field data, modeling data, historical information, archival data sets, remote sensing, so that he as an atmospheric physicist can begin to talk fruitfully to someone who does phytoplankton modeling in the ocean. We also put this through the prism of the set of topics, through the prism of allowing an assessment of what's happening in the Arctic to be looked at from a broader Earth system science perspective. And then finally, any topic we thought be a candidate for the dialogue should be one that enhances the communication amongst the scientists and the stakeholders and the decision makers and the public. So I guess our first question...
Charlie, can I jump in and reiterate something you mentioned earlier, but I want to really point out and make it clear that these example topics are just to start off the discussion here and at the workshop about to explore needs in data management for synthesis.
Right.
And that we'll move from these broad recommendations to, you know, more specific kind of looking at problems, needs, areas of development. So these science topics are really just tools,
right,
to get at these other issues.
And those, in fact, were, as I say, examples. We would like to have your at least early reaction to the examples we've chosen, and if you ultimately get the sense of what we're trying to do, and then if you yourself have any topics that could serve our needs and adhere to this set of criteria, we would very much be interested in hearing that. So I think at this point we can open this up for discussion, and I guess the rule is to raise your hand in the little Wimba interface there, and Helen and Arcus folks, if you could put them in order and begin fielding the questions for us, that'd be great.
I have a suggestion that's kind of a little bit wild and maybe dangerous, but I wonder if we could right now get a sense of whether the people on the phone get what the organizing committee's talking about and what the plan is, whether you really grasp what we're trying to do and how these science examples will be used as tools at the workshop, or whether you don't, so that we have a better idea of whether we need to go into that further. And one easy way to do that is by just having everybody click the yes button or the no button on the bottom of the Horizon Wimba interface on the bottom right-hand side.
And no voting by the organizing committee.
Oh,
that would be unfair.
Come on.
If you don't understand, it's true. So if people want to do that, go for it, and we'll see.
Yeah, we promise not to penalize anyone for the no vote.
Yeah, no, this is just really important, because if this isn't quite making sense, then it's we really need to do some rethinking about how we're approaching it, and that's partly why we wanted to have this eTown meeting.
Perhaps those who vote no can perhaps give us an idea of what they found a little bit confusing or not engaging sufficiently.
Right. So without not looking at who's saying anything, I see 19 people that have 20 that say yes, 21 that say yes, they basically get it, 7 so far that don't, and a few people have raised their hands and would like to make comments. Is this a good time to do that, Charlie?
I think it's a perfect time.
Okay, starting with Mike Steele, and then Bill Manley, and then Craig Tweedy, and then Jim Mislanek, in that order. So go, Mike.
Okay, this is Mike Steele. These examples sound a lot like good projects that could have been proposed for the synthesis announcements. I'm just wondering how this differs from that.
Well, again, it's meant to, if I could just tackle this, anyone else on the organizing committee can follow up. This is meant to begin to explore very specifically how disparate data sets that otherwise sit amongst individual researchers or in different data archives can be united for the specific end of catalyzing synthesis and allowing us to understand a little bit better how the whole system is pieced together. Are there, in fact, mechanisms by which we could help break down the barriers of interoperability that would allow a social scientist to talk productively with a phytoplankton population dynamicist, let's say? And yes, you're right that this could certainly have been a small cluster of PIs who got together and tried to tackle this issue, but in the end they might have been going down unique pathways to their data solutions. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to get this scoped out from as broad a community perspective as possible. And it's meant to be a community-based effort, not just four or five PIs getting together and writing a really cool project.
Well, I think this is Marika. I think also, you know, it's not just answering those science questions, but in sort of thinking about those science questions, okay, what challenges would you face from your particular discipline in being able to answer that question, and what does that mean for the data and modeling needs that we're trying to really, I mean, that's what the subject of the meeting is what those data and modeling needs are, not so much what the answer is to any individual example. So they're really supposed to just be examples to get that discussion started and start thinking about, well, you know, this is how I'd approach it, but I can't because I don't know how to get that data, or that data doesn't exist, or, you know, what those sorts of challenges are.
Super. Thanks, Marika and Charlie. So, Bill, you're next with a question or comment.
Yeah, so Bill Manley, University of Colorado, and I guess I have a couple of questions, and the first one is, well, first off, you know, all these examples look really good, I think. And your clarification helped out a lot there, I think. But the first question is, are these examples then meant to be one example per breakout group? Each breakout group tackles an individual example and works through issues of data availability and accessibility and format and sharing and synthesis?
Bill, that is such a good question. That's one of the things we're actually really interested in feedback on, because we've talked about several different approaches. Maybe we could defer that till a little bit later in the discussion when we're going to ask for that kind of feedback. Would that be okay?
Well, okay. Well, it leads into my second question or comment. That is, I think it's a really good idea to have some real-world examples from which to get down and dirty, if you will, to dig into what the real constraints are, needs are, and opportunities are, and for data management, sharing, and synthesis. And that way, I think it's a great approach. But I have one concern, that if we have five breakout groups and five examples, that each group then would then probably get really caught up in those individual example issues related to science. The different processes involved, the different scientific questions, and then come back to a plenary session coming from these different directions. And so it might help to have breakout groups work with the same examples or with a smaller number of examples so that different perspectives could be brought together as a group.
Uh-huh. Great.
Yeah. It, you know, part of the exercise, whether we like it or not, during the workshop itself is going to be synthesis. We're going to have to create a synthesis of all the very many interesting ideas that are going to be thrown into the ring. And so that's one potential mechanism to maybe begin to collapse either the number or have maybe a larger number of groups at the beginning, then collapse it into a smaller set to try to blend these ideas.
Great. And thanks, Bill, for that really useful thought and recommendation. Let's go on to the next person, Craig.
Thanks, Wendy. And thanks, folks, for taking this on. I think it's really exciting, really great someone's doing this. Just a query. I guess I sort of see this as the effort you're building here is drawing from the Arctic Observing Network on sort of like a flow-through system whereby you synthesize data and that goes to research findings, policy, et cetera, et cetera. But I think there's a need for a feedback mechanism where you go directly from synthesis back to the Arctic Observing Network, and that would be a mechanism that would allow for you to improve your Arctic Observing Network by sort of highlighting areas where you've got gaps in information or data coming from, where you need more sensors, et cetera, et cetera. So just wondering if that is being considered, I guess that's a bit of my bias coming in there as well. But again, thanks very much for doing this.
This is John Whitley. Let me just respond to that saying I think that actually helps in what you said. It really helps because I think that's sort of one of those kind of end product examples or recommendations that sort of comes out of a meeting and a workshop like this, which is, you know, we can talk about the synthesis we do, and the answer is where do we have to see this going to sort of inform where things go from there? And that's when we talk about we're going to have different examples and several different examples from different working groups. I think what we anticipate is that each working group, even working different examples, some will come up with different, because of the topics they're approaching, different kinds of recommendations or different kinds of challenges and how they might approach it. And that what we also expect to see is that there will also be some overlap and things that cut across similar types of problems. And one of them might be able to say sort of decision-making at the end of, you know, if you've got all this data and you can see it, how are you going to get into informing what you do next? And I think that, and we have some of that worked into the sort of after the next stage of working group, which is what are the common themes? And I won't say more anymore about that unless you guys want to go on to what you're doing. But thanks.
That's an excellent point.
Jim Mislanek was next.
This comment pretty much pertains to the enhanced communications between stakeholders and decision makers bullet there. But it seems to me that ARC's emphasis recently has been pretty much pan-Arctic. And some of the information, the way that information is exchanged with decision makers varies a great deal whether you're dealing on a pan-Arctic scale versus local regional decision-making aspects of climate change or whatever it might be. So I just want to understand whether the workshop is going to be considering things like, say, regional variability that affects things at a scale of decision-making within a village, for example, whether you stabilize the shoreline or whether you do something else, or whether ARC's emphasis is still going to be primarily pan-Arctic.
Jim, before the other members of the OC jump in, and Janet Intrieri might have something to say about this as well, it's been made clear to me that the NSF ARCS program and NSF see this workshop as a service to the broader Arctic research community, and therefore my understanding is not constrained by specific currently funded objectives of the program.
Okay.
But I might have interpreted that incorrectly. Janet, is there anything you would like to say?
No, that's what I would have emphasized as well, that although this is ARC's sponsored workshop, that I think that we want to extend this to the needs of the broader community, because, you know, it wouldn't be very synthesizing to, exclude at a level that other synthesis or system science could be informed on. So, I know I definitely back that up, and I would encourage you to think broadly, which doesn't mean that it can't be regional.
Okay, thanks.
And Patty Matry, you were next. And those of you who should lower your hands by clicking on your hand if you've already spoken. So, Patty, go ahead.
All right. Well, thanks for having this e-meeting, because I can't go to Seattle. The second thing, it would be possible for the people in the organizing committee, but now I recognize Wendy's voice, if you could identify yourself before you talk, so that I know, we know who's actually giving, providing an answer.
Oh, thank you. Very good point.
Yeah. And then mine is a sort of, I'm confused, because most of us went through this sort of exercise of, data finder and data users and data miners and how to put it together and how to interact in order to propose and get funded. And so at least we tried to convince those of you who reviewed our proposal that we knew what we were doing. And so in part, is this workshop trying to get a unique way or a better way or help us discover things that we haven't done? Since I can't go, am I going to hear something that I've already had to go through the exercise? I see, the big discussions and the pictures. Those are, but there is these steps ahead of time that even though we definitely are not in the database and gathering data, we still have to do.
So, Marika or John, either of you want to address that?
Yeah, John Weatherly. So, I've been on the organizing committee for this. And in some sense, part of what I expect that you will hear coming out of this, some of it I think you will see are things that, exactly what you say, things that to do some aspects of interdisciplinary and synthesis, and Mike Steele also mentioned saying, boy, these look like things that were, proposed in synthesis as well. But I think even to this date, I think NSF clearly would like to know how to, within ARCS, if we're doing synthesis, how to support that activity across the program, for one, so that everybody proposing to, maybe everybody to level the playing field or whatever, that everybody proposing to do synthesis has either access or knows that the synthesis they're doing is going to contribute to either a larger synthesis and that the data of different types, and I think, and the different types, including the social, whether it's anthropology or economics or biology, that all of those have, they don't all have to be, all data all necessarily all have to be in one place, but that we have, I think, a better, let's say, just management of all these kinds of data wherever they are, and if we sort of tag them all as part of ARCS, that it's maybe not just the PIs who had that data and the people that know them only that have maybe that access to that data, but it's public data, and it's not that it's public access, but at least the community should be able to have that access, and we have a big challenge of a lot more data that we have to find access to in the future.
I mean, I agree, but already surveying for data for my specific topic, I'm having to go everywhere, all over. However, I was given very clear indications that we're supposed to do synthesis. But in order to do the synthesis, I've got to gather the data. And it is just about everywhere.
Well, that, in some sense, is one of the issues we would hopefully be able to tackle, the fact that the data is everywhere. It's all over the place. And it's literally terabytes of information to try to sort through. And perhaps there could be some coherence of purpose as a community to design some thinking about how we're going to handle this overload of information and make best sense out of it.
This is Mike Steele. Okay, so the old way to do it is I get funded and I create a data set and I submit it to a data center. So is that what we're talking about?
Mike, it's just that I have to go to the Chinese data center, and even there, you get directed to an individual, and then I go to the Japanese data center, and there they do it in a different way. And each time, at the end, I have to rely on personal contacts to gather all of it. At the end, we'll submit to a data center all of this large compilation from which we will do the synthesis. So I guess if one of the conclusions of the workshop is to derive support and understanding from ARCs, that even though that's not where our major effort ought to go, more than what we thought was going to be there, we'll end up there.
Patty, this is Wendy Warnick. To me, what you're describing is one of the priority issues that is driving the need for this workshop. And what Mike Steele said is also one of the issues, that some projects have actually a very good structure available to them, a very clear path to getting the data that they need and want, to knowing what to do with it to make it absolutely accessible to the people that need it. Some people are in the position that you described, where you're having to talk to individuals, data centers, different kinds of structures all over the world. There's no common language, path, accessibility, information available. And this workshop is not to establish science priorities or to say this is exactly what the ARCS program needs in order to do this particular kind of synthesis. It's to look at this much broader community problem and community picture to try to look at what can be done to make an easier path. And I think members of the organizing committee can talk about this a little bit more coherently, but to me, what you and Mike both said are just different parts of the exact problem that this workshop is attempting to get a handle on. So any of the organizing committee want to jump in there and say more articulately what I was trying to describe?
This is Larry Hinsman. Can I jump in for a second?
Yes.
I think we can look at it this way, that about 10 or 15 years ago, the ARCS program really forced NSF-funded scientists to put their data in archives, make it available to the whole broader community. And as a result of that, we made really remarkable achievements over the last decade. And now we're at the point where that's well established, that's ongoing, and now we're ready for another paradigm shift where we can make huge advances again. And what we're really looking for is what's the best way to do this? How can we really take our data, take our combined efforts, take the modeling tools that are available, and really make another threshold advance? And so that's kind of where we want to go with this. You know, what's the next best thing on the horizon?
And Vladimir has his hand up, wants to make a comment.
Yeah. Well, actually, the discussion which we just heard, it's exactly what I was going to say. I'm sending through the electronic system, just a second, the web link. In our community, we are working on the notion called virtual observatories. And it would be a conference. The web link is just right now on our web connection. So my understanding of the topic of how to do synthesis to understand the system, you have to have data. And you can collect data yourself, or a group can collect data from our groups and then do some synthesis. But in a new world of internet and World Wide Web, it's kind of difficult to submit data to all data centers and then to collect data from all centers. It's something needs to be done on convincing people to make their data available on their own websites, so data could be downloaded not only by the contact of the person to person, but computer to computer. And that is all virtual observatories is about. It's to create, I call it data fabric. Other people call it data grid or whatever data infrastructure. And then if data are available, people may build something, some software on top of that, provide data access to the entire set of, hello?
Yes, we're here.
Because I thought that my telephone line just died. So it's my point is that there are ways to improve what you just discussed. And even data submitted to the data center is not yet enough now. So there is a field where people work out, and I invite you all to take a look into this www.egy.org/VOIG web link and address that this issue at the workshop, maybe not achieve something at the workshop, because I see that the workshop actually really structured in a way of how to address a synthesis from the available data sources. But there are also ways to improve it, and if the workshop would be setting a working group or task force or whatever you call it on a data management for virtual observatories, building, let's say, virtual observatory for Arctic Observing Network, it does not necessarily should be one portal. It could be a few or many portals and many data grids, data nodes, sorry. And in that case, I think the synthesis could be more realistic than now. That's all what I have.
Yeah, this is Charlie. I was just going to mention that before I spoke a little bit about the NCEAS, the National Center for Ecological Analysis and Synthesis, and when this was founded in the early to mid-1990s, there was not much attention paid to the cyber infrastructure needs for synthesis. And in the intervening years, they recognized that there was a need to create something that they now called eco-informatics. And they had a major, a major facilities grant from the National Science Foundation that has plugged that gap. So the community of ecological synthesizers recognized that there needed to be due diligence on this whole issue of how you craft data and modeling for synthesis in new ways. And so as a parallel effort, it was identified as a decided need of that entire community.
Okay, the next person with their hand raised was Ann Jensen.
Yeah, we've drifted a little bit since I stuck my hand up, but nonetheless, one thing that's kind of occurred to me here is that we seem to be aiming at least in including the human dimension, but there's not really a lot of human dimensions folks or policy scientists involved. And I think if we're going to be making recommendations as to how things can go to policy, we probably should have some involvement there rather than trying to, reinvent the wheel. But with regard to the human dimensions data, it's very different sort of stuff than say ice core data or hydrologic data or whatever, and there are certain issues about making it available that have not yet been licked. Now, ALOCA has been funded as an IP logic, but only a project, but only partially to try and address some of the issues about dealing with modern-day social science data of various types, community-oriented data or community-based data, and that's something that really needs to be taken seriously into consideration. There's a lot of privacy issues. There's also issues, you guys are thinking about how to put your data in a data center. Those of us who work in human dimensions, I'm actually working on a paper on issues of collaborative projects and institutional review boards or human subjects boards, whatever they happen to be called. And there are some institutions where the HRB is insisting that the primary data be destroyed at the end of the project. Or they will not approve the researcher going forth and doing their work. So there's some real issues that need attention at that level, or it's kind of pointless to be talking about putting this stuff in a data center. The second thing I would say is that time depth is is key. As an archaeologist, I use all sorts of data, but I can't tell you how many times I've seen promising articles about high-resolution climatic data, only to figure out that when I get the article, somebody stopped at the Younger Dryas, which is, you know, a few thousand years too early. You know, we do need to make some kind of a linkage and really consider how to get from the instrumental record back to longer time periods successfully, how to bridge that. Because otherwise, you know, most of the processes that people will seem to be studying and interested in are things that don't happen in, you know, the last 30 years. They're much longer time scale sorts of things going on. And if we don't look at them in longer time scales, we're just leaving ourselves open to being ignored or being considered irrelevant by policy folks who don't want to hear what we might be trying to say.
So, and this is Wendy. Other people may want to respond to some of the really excellent points that you've made. One of the things that I have been thinking about a lot is we actually invited quite a number, because we had felt exactly as you do that we really needed this kind of interdisciplinary and broad inclusion, and policymakers are in our category that we're calling knowledge brokers, and we did invite a number of people, but were apparently either timing or something, we were unable to make a compelling case to them about why this mattered to them and why their input would be useful, but also what they could get out of it, because we, as you said, that's one of the areas where we don't have as good a participation in the workshop as we would like. So one of my questions is that sort of cultural issue of how do we make that connection better between the scientific community and the policymaking community. And I have the same question with regard to the human dimensions, social sciences community, and the natural and physical scientific community. And I know Mary Beth is on the line, and that's something that, mm-hmm. as a member of the organizing committee, she's given a lot of thought to. And I wondered if she had any comments about that, your point.
Yeah, this is Mary Beth here. And, I agree with you, and I sit in the same situation as you do, being both a social scientist and an archaeologist. There's a couple of issues here that I'm hoping that we can get into in the context of looking at these specific kinds of questions as examples of dealing with data. I think for some of us who work with these social science data sets, we're well aware of the restrictions on them, but we're also and for those of us who don't, those are the things that are commonly highlighted as being the big problem with dealing with social science data sets. I think the range and variety of data that is out there that can be accessed needs to be discussed in the broader context of data management issues, and also data issues of data resolution and comparability. And I was actually thinking about this in the context of the comment that Mike Steele made a few minutes ago, and that is we tend to work fairly well with developing approaches to synthesis within a suite of related disciplines, but not so well across disciplines because of these kinds of data problems that you've pointed out. And so my hope is that we can start to get into some of those, some of that nitty-gritty, and for example, issues of taking let's say, unrestricted qualitative data and making it compatible with qualitative data and accessible for synthetic purposes. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I'm hoping we can get into some meatier discussions about these kinds of data compatibility and access issues in the context of the workshop.
Yeah, I think so, but I also think, you know, There is an awful lot of data that is restricted that perhaps could be worked on or held in such a way that certain restrictions could be lifted, or that at least useful chunks could be made available. But that's going to require some serious database programming and input and some serious
proper
discussion. And I'm thinking that you know, I mean, ALOCA didn't get fully funded. So, you know, that's not been a priority for funding. I mean, they whacked pretty hard at the budget for that project.
So,
and
for those who don't have a clue what it is, could you say what ALOCA is?
Okay, ALOCA was basically is an IPY project, which is basically attempting to, out of National Snow and Ice Data Center, among other places, which was attempting to deal with precisely those issues of how do you deal with community originated data. In other words, data that may have a lot of issues of privacy or that may be partially restricted or that a community may be willing to share but only under certain circumstances for certain purposes, or certain fields are perfectly willing to have public access but not others, but you do want to keep them in the original database so that you can, you know, perhaps do re-interviews or whatever. How do you deal with that? You can't have the entire data set out for public consumption. And there's a tremendous number of issues, and often in the past they've simply gotten in the way of making anything publicly available.
Yeah.
And there are folks who are trying to get past that, but it's going to require some effort, and, you know, obviously effort is going to require funding. And I think that I think we need to consider this, you know, perhaps more of a priority or come to understand the importance of it, because really looking at the Arctic system without people, particularly for the North American Arctic, is kind of silly, because basically post-glacially it's always had people. So, you know, the whole thing has evolved as a piece. That said, you know, that's the concern I have there. I think your timing was probably an issue. I think for certain archaeologists, historically, ARCS has not been welcoming to archaeology, and I can tell you that there are a number of rather prominent people who have told me they will never be involved in anything from ARCS until there is a Dear Colleague letter saying that archaeology is part of ARCS or can be part of ARCS. And I don't think I've ever seen that letter. So, you know, I know there's some people who will never play until that happens.
Okay.
Because they've been blown out of the water too often.
This is Charlie. I'm just looking at my clock here. How long do we have left on this call?
Well, we scheduled it until 11:30, but we can take longer if people are available. If we could ask people to keep their questions or comments short, I think it would be good to go through the rest of the people that have their hands raised, which is just a couple.
Okay, why don't we do that, and then after those last comments, let's go to the slides and bid adieu.
Okay, so I think Sergey was next.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I'll try to be very short. Time is running low. As a practitioner of real-time data assimilation, I put on the display our website where we do this space weather run with real-time data involvement. As a practitioner of this business, I'd like to say that, to my view, there is no clear attitude across National Science Foundation to this activity. I think it requires to be institutionalized, like pretty much a broader impact of our proposal that we write now. Maybe it should be a part of this broader impact criteria, but it is necessary to spell out in most precise terms what we are talking about and why it is important for science to try to develop and for community to try to cooperate our efforts with. I had experiences writing reviews on my proposals that real-time maturation data assimilation is not real science, it's something different. And I don't think this is, as long as this approach to this is possible, I don't think that major success in data assimilation and providing data for scientific community will be the case. So that's my comment on that. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, and Peter Hacker was the next person.
Yep. I started this having a question, and it was on the previous slide, Charlie.
Yeah.
It looked like the first point on that slide, you were asking about the purpose of the meeting, and it looks like the real point is about this data management. Do they provide good test topics for data management? And so,
do the science topics provide the context for drawing forth these concepts, many of which we've heard about today?
Right. So I guess after the discussion that's been going on for the last 20 minutes, I come to the conclusion that the real underlying issue is the data management issue, and that the test topics, I think, are good examples to bring those points out.
Yeah, I would make it, though, much broader than the simple two words, data management. I think we need to be using words like innovation and data discovery and interoperability and catalyzing synthetic research. So it's not just data management, which many put kind of the moniker of IT-type issues around. We're doing something beyond that. We're trying to really focus on the science-data synergy. Not
I guess that's what I'd like to address with just a couple of comments, that synergy, if I may.
Yeah, sure.
I think the point that Vladimir and then Sergey just made are very important, this idea of a distributed virtual data system. And I think in oceanography, one case that has been working quite well is the case of GDE, the Global Ocean Data Assimilation Experiment. And the main point is, if people go to a lot of trouble to gather the data they need for their specific science and then perhaps make some value-added products from that raw data, and that might be model output through assimilation models or just mapped data, for example.
Uh-huh.
We don't want those value-added products to be lost,
right.
And we don't want other people to have to redo them. So your data management system needs to capture those products,
sure.
And make them easily available to others.
Sure.
And using the case of the GDE, I think that's really what they've established. You know, they've established an underlying group of data providers, and then people who do value-added activities like data assimilation, making synthesized products, if you like, and then a virtual distribution system so that anybody can have easy access to the data. And I think the point about the confidential data, for example, is easily solved. You know, that's just one or two or five sites on the network that can provide secure access to the data for those groups that need it. That summarizes the comments.
That's an excellent comment.
Okay. See, who's next? Gleb?
Can I make some comment?
Hello?
Can I make some comment?
Who's that?
I'm Jian Wang from International Art Exhibition Center.
Well, you have to raise your hand and get in line.
Okay.
Hi, this is Philip Petleev. I would like to know what is a good example of one-stop shop for data in International Pacific Research Center. And as I guess, they organize reference for all data simulation, data assimilations, and real raw data. So is it possible to organize one top shop somewhere in ARCS and to make reference for all resources? That is the suggestion.
Okay. And then Bill Manley, again.
Hi. Like Craig, I'd like to commend the ARCS committee for considering the importance here of data, and I think it's often overlooked in the academic community. I think the workshop will really more fully develop or scope out this issue of what really is the problem as it exists now. But I think it's becoming more clear. I think it's so clear to a lot of us that there are really hurdles to improving Arctic science and synthesizing science, and a lot of that has to do with, you know, you have to pretty much know who has the data that you want and what format it's in through the grapevine. You have to know about these things ahead of time to be able to do what you need to do. And so it can be very difficult to find data. There's a lot of reduced synergy. There's a lot of wasted effort, redundant effort. And so I guess I wanted to bring up that a lot of these same issues were considered a few years back with the Arctic GIS workshop, and there was a report out of that, and so there's a lot of common interest there in terms of wading through all this information that's available and finding working models for finding what you need, and data management, data distribution, data synthesis, and then finally analysis. And so I'd encourage folks to look at the Arctic GIS workshop from a few years ago. It's at the ARCS website.
And we will also have copies of that report at this workshop. And thanks for raising that, Bill. And Jia Wang, you're only on the phone, not on Horizon Wind, but do you want to ask your question or make your comment now?
Okay. I'm Jia Wang. I came in late, and so I'm only on with my phone right now. I think the Arctic system is very complicated. Have five components. For example, atmosphere, cryosphere, oceanography, and land process, and biosphere. So this synthesis is very, very important for all these five components. However, if data can categorize into these five subsystems, and so each system have their model, for example, and combine their data to do the reanalysis for individual, even individual model can not be coupled systems right now, but still can provide the model output with data together. I think that will be make it easier for everyone to access to this data set for individual components. I think that's my comment, or someone can respond to it.
Thank you.
Okay. Shall we move on? Are there any more hands up, Wendy?
No, that's it.
Okay, so maybe we should just pass on the last couple of slides. I know that people have to be moving on. Okay, so this last slide that's in front of you really is sort of moving towards the broad set of questions that we'd like to be able to tackle as a consequence of meeting next week. And, well, actually, it's been a consequence of a process of planning this whole thing out. And certainly we've had our ears open for most all of this particular conversation. And I find that there's some really interesting ideas that the community here has contributed. We have three major questions that we sort of entered into as we began this planning exercise. And the first question is our overarching science question. What are the data and modeling needs to advance synthesis-focused Arctic system science? I would say that much of the comments that we received today very, very nicely addressed that issue, and it seems as though there are all sorts of impediments, but at the same time, all sorts of opportunities to begin crafting a new way of doing business. As part of that, we have the second question, which is really kind of going to organize our stock-taking of what's out there, what seems to be working now, what's actually needed, what in some sense is not working now that we could begin to learn from in order to make advancements, and what are the keys to success. So part of this workshop activity will be to try to figure out really, what are some of the success stories here? What are the potentially fruitful avenues to go forward on? And then thirdly, we want to distill out from the set of worked examples and the set of broad discussions, some of which to take place in plenary. We want to be able to distill that out, practical suggestions, and begin to talk about some of these common themes. What are some of the mechanisms that keep coming up in the discussion, and the approaches, and the tools, and procedures? So our virtual observatories, the wave of the future that we really need to spend some effort thinking about. How about intercomparison exercises? We heard about geospatial analysis, and there's already been a workshop about that. And so let's take these ideas and formalize them and pass them as a set of recommendations. So we very much have appreciated all the time and energy everyone's put into this particular E-Town, and we really look forward to seeing many of you next week, recognizing that some people on the phone are not going to be joining the gathering. We will be streaming, we'll have some streaming video webcast of the plenaries that will give you an idea of what we've been up to.
And the stream, people will also be able to ask questions and interact directly with the discussions through a chat feature where your questions will be put up on the screen, and so you can participate to some degree, although it's not like, you know, being there. So just to let to remind everybody about that. And there will be more information sent out about when and how to join the stream and do that. Is that correct, Helen?
Yes, that's correct, via the ARCS list and ARCIC info as well, and it will also be posted on the workshop webpage.
There will be all sorts of background material for whoever would like to download that. We'll have the PowerPoints up there. We'll be posting updates and all of the background information leading to this eTown and the actual event you can find at the website there. With that, unless there are any other pressing questions, thank you very much to everyone for your time and your interest in all of this, and very, very interesting ideas just in this short hour and a half that we've been able to gather. So thank you very much, and you're free to certainly contact any of the people on the organizing committee for any additional comments that we could bring to Seattle. Okay?
Great.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.